This is the Packet Pushers Podcast, the greatest ever data networking podcast to be located in a well, virtually ventilated space with free coffee, comfortable chairs, and an unquenchable thirst for all things data networking. Today's show is sponsored by Riverbed. Riverbed has been a leader in the WAN optimization market for many, many years, and many of you will already be familiar with it. And, you know, basically what they do is make the most of your WAN. Take it, optimize it, performance enhance it, double it up, fold it in half, and make it better than it was before. And what we're going to be doing today is talking to Riverbed in a sponsored podcast about the state of WAN acceleration and to deep dive into some of the technology that's going on in their space. So let's kick this straight off and start introduce the team from Riverbed. First of all, welcome Hansum Bey, Chief Technology Officer. How are you doing?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I'm sure it's happy hour somewhere in the world as you're listening to this. So welcome. Have a shot on me. I'm coming from you live from Las Vegas in a secret location on in Aria on 18th floor next to room 52.
Yep.
Having said that, longtime customer of Riverbed, longtime CCIE, longtime networking guy, longtime packet analysis guy. And today, our goal is to tell you why applications can finally impose its will on the network and get some job done. Right. So ultimately, that's what Riverbed wants to do, is let the application do its bidding on top of the networking portion. That's it.
Perfect. Okay, so also joining us today is Brad Wood. Brad, tell the audience a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am a technical director here at Riverbed in our Advanced Technologies Group. I do all things protocols. I've spent the last 25 years as both a customer consuming this technology as you guys and then as selling it. So my background is just making all these applications sponge together and work well and understand how A ties to B and why that matters.
Perfect. And also with us today is Scott Wilson. Scott, tell the audience a little about yourself.
I'm also a technical director in the Advanced Technology Group. I spent a little bit of time before I joined Riverbed in the Air Force and then at Cisco. So my main focus is on networking and satellite communications and all kinds of fun things around wide area networks. And I'm here today to have some fun and talk about Riverbed.
All right, so let's kick things off. We're into the second decade of WAN optimization. I mean, most networking engineers out there would know about WAN optimization and the basic fundamentals of it, right? And I would think a substantial number of customers probably have WAN optimization appliances in their network. But it's really, like most things, we continue to develop our technologies and we continue to develop the features and the products and the capabilities that we've got. And I know that Riverbed's been talking much more about application performance infrastructure, right? So naturally, that's part of moving past WAN op and so forth. So tell me a little bit about how Riverbed's moving past WAN optimization and into this concept of application performance infrastructure.
It turns out that, you know, one of the frustrating things about me when I was a network architect at a major financial was that the onus was on the networking guys to come up with QoS classes. So as a network engineer, we all sat around and we decided, what do you think? 30% is good for business critical? And people would look around and go, yeah, that sounds good, because we had no idea, right? And so the idea here...
we wouldn't even know what business critical meant half the
time. Of course not, but we
didn't even know. And if you got them in the room, you'd have the Oracle guy going, I'm the most important person. And then you'd have the email guy going, I'm the most important person in the room.
And the most frustrating thing was that it's a static threshold that you type into a router, and that's all we had. Mm. And what's coming, the whole idea of an SD-WAN is that it's a living, breathing entity. The network comes alive to do the application's bidding, right? And we as the networking guys can make that happen. And you know, one thing...
I thought you were going to burst into something like we're going to go into organic networking.
Well, you know what? I would say this is the good Skynet, right? Think about it from that perspective. But I will say that networking, we in Riverbed, finally going to give the networking people the necessary weapon to arm themselves to meet this dynamic world where application requirements change. I'll give you one final example before I turn the baton over, and that was the CEO decides to hang out with the troops, go to a remote location, have a town hall. The only problem is the AF-41 class from that location doesn't have enough bandwidth. So now what are you going to do? You scramble to file an emergency change, get it through the process, get it, and you're typing the command thinking, man, I hope there isn't an unintended consequence somewhere in the network. And then when the town hall happens, you go back on the router and you make changes, right? Mm-hmm. In the world of SD-WAN, that doesn't have to happen. So that's our goal. That's what we want to accomplish.
It's really about this change from the ways we use. I'm sort of hearing this thing saying it's away from where we used to be, which was sort of like the static, non-movable, configure something and it was done. It was very like imperative mode. If you're a computer scientist, you'll talk about it being imperative. You configure this, it does exactly that. And we're moving more away to something that's a bit more sort of, you know, what I want is to see this application work really well. And the box is starting to be what, more intelligent, more adaptive, more able to say, I can do that, but you know what, you've got a trade-off against these apps over here that are actually on the box. Is there a feedback loop going on there?
So the kind of goal from going what we have today, where you were saying, you know, it's the static environment, is truly going to intent-based management. So knowing that 2 p.m. on a Tuesday afternoon, tax accountants using a particular piece of software need priority on the network. And based upon the visibility that we have, so, you know, Riverbed is a company we started out where we ran optimization. We bought up several other companies, and we have this whole application performance portfolio now. So we can see data from the click of the mouse button all the way to the block of the disk and determine where bottlenecks happen. Being able to see that level of visibility and where we sit in the network path, so all the data is flowing through, we can automatically start applying QoS rules, we can change the way that we optimize. So all of those interactions of being able to see what's going on in the network and then make an intent-based management decision on top of it is where the real magic comes in.
Okay, let's talk a little history here for a quick second. So in the notes here that we put together, because we've been prepping for these shows, and that's all good, it said the main use case for WAN optimization in the past has been SIFS, because the SIFS protocol wasn't very efficient, right? So many people would have deployed it to try and make an advance there. But things are changing, aren't they? The way the apps we use in the enterprise are really changing away from the, you know, file shares over the WAN type thing to something else.
Exactly. Nobody maps a share to Office 365 over SIFS. I mean, that doesn't happen. So the main thing that we have today and the main application that we deal with is SSL is wrappering something, and more likely it's SSL wrappering HTTP, which is wrappering another protocol. So one of the things is Riverbed that we mastered as a company coming in, you know, from the very beginnings was understanding what's happening at layer 7 and knowing all of the dialects of the various protocols that we're talking to. So we talk SIFS. When we talk SIFS, we talk SIFS. When we talk MAPI, we talk MAPI. So being able to see all that and all the secret sauce that we have around the way that we handle SSL decodes and SSL, we are, you know, very much the way that our technology works. We are an SSL man in the middle. We're a trusted, but be able to terminate conversations and reestablish them and make that transparent is the sweet spot.
And that's the way we did things. You know, like there was so much we could do with SIFS back in the day to optimize it, but in a lot of these days, a lot of these protocols are actually optimized themselves by the vendors who make them.
Absolutely, yeah. So one thing I will say is that to kind of sum that up, right, SSL or HTTP is the new TCP, right? Think about that because, you know, as a packet analysis guy, we know we're TCP this, packets this, round trip that. In the brave new world, it doesn't really matter. Right. Because so the perfect analogy I want to give you guys, right? We've all been doing this a long time. There was a time in our history as a networking guys where cable plant testing needed to happen. You know, we had faulty cable out there that impacted performance, and that was one of the checklist things that we did. Make sure it's up to a particular standard, Cat 3 at the time, Cat 4, Cat 5, etc. Right. Mm-hmm. And now it's an afterthought. Everybody either uses Wi-Fi or every cable's almost all known good. So the protocols, the SIFS, the HTTP, that's all known. That's all, you know, it's 90s, if you will. The brave new world is about the cloudy things where applications reside somewhere, right? And it turns out Riverbed handles all three use cases. We have workload in the cloud. Check, got that. We have workload in the data center. Bread and butter. Check, got that. The one place where work gets done, if we think about it, is in the branch. Because as far as I know, I've never logged into a server and started working on my Visio network documentation in the data center, right? We all sit at a remote location. And guess who's got the technology to make that magic happen? Riverbed. So, you know, I'll give you, you know, one of the examples that's changed, right? So, Scott, maybe you can talk about GeoDNS and how that comes into play. Something as simple as, you know, DNS in Office 365 environment, how that can impact performance and how we solved it.
Oh, yeah. It was kind of a great thing for me coming from a strong networking background, right, where essentially we had some users over in Asia Pacific, for example, right, and they're coming into Office 365 and it's just not working well for them. And I was like, well, you can get there, you know, if you're going to Office 365, the DNS just takes you there, right? But they're actually hopping out from Asia Pacific into an entry point in Asia Pacific. That kind of makes sense when you think about it. But the mailbox where they're actually getting their mail in and out is back in the U.S. And so we were like, well, okay, we're optimizing this. Let's apply that. And all we did was optimize them from wherever they were, let's say in Japan, going into an entry point in Singapore. That was great. But it's not really the true end-to-end. So then we said, okay, let's dig into the SSL, pull that wrapper off, pull off the wrapper of HTTP or the MAPI wrapper, and go, where's that mailbox? Where's that location? There's a secret code in there, like BLU, for example, Blue Ridge, Virginia. Yeah. And let's rebuild that connection from where you are in Japan all the way to Blue Ridge, Virginia, and give you true end-to-end optimization. And so of sorts, we're kind of looking into that application and saying, we can get you to the best place where that application is served from. And because we know there's this latency, there's this WAN, we'll do our bread and butter stuff to it and make it feel truly like you're back in Blue Ridge, Virginia, as you're sending and receiving email.
That's important for a couple of reasons. Now, as I'm sitting here, I'm thinking about, so I'm just about to move houses in a few weeks and I may actually be stuck on 3G for a while. And if I can optimize my traffic load over mobile networks using this GeoDNS type of stuff, that actually makes a huge difference, doesn't it?
Yeah, certainly could, right? So your location now becomes one part of the equation. It's where that application is being served from and just getting you there in the most efficient way and taking care of all those neat little things about the protocol that we can abstract out, make it much faster.
Do you work with Microsoft on these protocols to get this information? Like, these protocols could change over time. Microsoft is, you know, they're not publicly released. They can change them. So how do you stay up to date with that?
We actually are fortunate enough. We have some very deep relationships within Microsoft as a company. So we have embedded Riverbed people that sit in Redmond and wear blue Microsoft shirts and talk Microsoft and wear Riverbed badges too. So anyhow, with all that said, we're protocol licensing partners. So what's really nice is Microsoft, when they, you know, like when they made the change from RPC writing HTTP to MAPI over HTTP, we got a whole lot of runway on that to be able to say, okay, we know it's coming. Let's modify our parser so that we're going to be able to understand it. And as MAPI over HTTP comes out, hey, guess what? We support that now. And as they start rolling it out furthermore, like with vNext and some of the new things, we roll that out as well. So really tight relationship, and having access to the source code doesn't hurt either.
I was going to say, that's important to me, because as things change, you need to change rapidly with that.
Greg, one thing that I will say is, well, first of all, you know, moment of silence for your 3G, if you're going to be confined to 3G.
I'm going to be roaming the internet like a savage.
It's one of those things that, you know, once you get used to the good life, once you've flown business class, hard to go back to coach. Once you've driven a Porsche, hard to go back to something else. So, yeah.
Tell me all about it.
So, moment of silence for Greg. But the other piece I will say is I am completely impressed by Microsoft. And I'll give credit where credit's due. Satya Nadella turned that company around on a dime. And the old Microsoft was, you know, hey, we're Microsoft. You come when I tell you to come. You listen to what I tell you. Because they were, let's face it, they're Microsoft, right?
Today's you get what Microsoft, we give you, and don't argue.
Greg, you know, today's Microsoft is entirely, it's the exact opposite. How can we help you? How can we facilitate you? How can we make it so that we're better for your customer who benefits for our products? And it's unbelievable. And so, you know, Brad, I think, undersold the level of involvement that we have with the top architects of Azure and ExpressRoute. And there isn't even an exchange team anymore, right? So they have a whole team that takes care of the entire ecosystem. So just a quick shout out to Microsoft and their transformation, because as far as I'm concerned, they're hitting all the right notes.
There's a couple of things I want you guys to clarify for me as I've been listening to this. Now, we introduced the show as Riverbed and WAN optimization and so on, and we've been kind of talking about Riverbed in that context, and we've talked quite a bit about some application-specific things that you do, kind of never leaving the WAN optimization context. But in fact, really, I think it's kind of a misnomer to call Riverbed WAN optimization at this point. isn't it? I mean, I think of the Steelhead product. A lot of the engineers listening to this would have worked with that product, and maybe that's what we know the most. Really, the context is about that application optimization, which doesn't just happen on Steelhead. There's a lot of pieces and parts that are going into the solution that you've been talking about that you can deliver.
Absolutely. So it turns out, what's very good thing that's happened with this whole SD-WAN movement is that if you're going to direct traffic, okay, it's no longer about IP addresses and port numbers. That really doesn't matter anymore for a couple of reasons. One, the IP address is for somebody that's living out in the internet. You're not going to have a rule based on an IP address because IP addresses come and go. What doesn't change is the host name. So it turns out all the foundational work that we did with WAN optimization, everything that Brad talked about learning about SSL, handling HTTP, handling MAPI, etc., gave us the foundation to launch into and using deep packet inspection, right? We don't want to say, right, I want to rate limit this application starting from 192.168 at 1.1 going to 172.16.1.24. That doesn't work anymore, right? So what we do is we identify the application using all the protocol and visibility tool sets that we have. We have a whole run rate business that does visibility. We bring that to bear and say, oh, this is in port 80, but it's not really HTTP. It's something else. And we'll classify it, rate limit it, and QoS it where it belongs.
So just to zoom in on that for a second, you're using all of the code that you guys have built over years and years to build application proxies and then saying, okay, that is good code for us to identify applications as well. You know, not just, you know, the proxy function, but now we can identify apps, which is key in that, as you're saying, IP addresses are very temporary things. And so now you can build a policy based around this application identification you've got.
Yeah, you can build that, but you also kind of think about it too, if you go into any big company, right, and you go, all right, what are all these applications? You have to have some way of grouping those together and being intelligent and smart about applying policy to a group of applications until you know more, until somebody in the CIO comes down and says, hey, this app, this is the one that needs to work Tuesday. All right, and then you go, okay, all right, now I can make a change, or I can have some kind of platform upon which can be a little more dynamic and make that change for me easier. And so as a network guy, I can enable the business, right? I can enable the business, make my CIO look good. He looks good. I look good. The company's doing well. So that's one thing as well, is that we're trying to take some deep thought around what are these application groups going to be, and then how you can steer that to kind of out of the box experience and then customize and tailor as you see fit later on.
Okay, so if I've identified those applications and now I can apply a policy to them to, you know, to meet a specific business need, we've used a couple of different words here. We've talked about WAN optimization, and I think most listeners would know what that means historically. We've also talked about directing or moving traffic, which kind of brings to mind a lot of the SD-WAN conversations we've had on packet pushers over the last several months with different companies, where that's kind of a different conversation. It's about application and user experience, but it's not through application proxies and optimizing traffic. It is through monitoring a link and pushing traffic across a specific path that will meet SLA. So from a Riverbed perspective, how do you interpret that? Is it still traffic direction across multiple links? Is it WAN optimization? Is it both?
It's both. So you're a great point. So if you look at our, you know, kind of our iterations of software as we've been progressing, we came out with a couple of releases ago with this path selection feature. So we could at least say in the very beginning, okay, based off your application or layer 7 DPI data, which way out of the Steelhead do I want to go? Do I want to go direct to net? Do I want to go down another MPLS link? Do I want to go down my most expensive MPLS link? So we can put most valuable data on most valuable links. And that we were able to classify that. And then we added on to it to be able to put a secure transport layer on top of that so that we can say, okay, I can connect site A to site B across the internet and do it and wrapper it inside of a secure technology. And then we can continue to build upon the application intelligence so that the applications themselves and the business logic behind those are what dictates which way the traffic goes across the network. And we continue to build that in through integration across multiple stacks within the network layer.
I think maybe we need to drill into actually how you do that, because you know, you're saying here that most people think of networking as routing, right? A packet comes in, I inspect the header, and I send it off on a path that it wants to go. Looping back on the conversation we had about application proxies, maybe we should just spend a couple of minutes briefly explaining how an application proxy works.
Yeah, so in essence, an application proxy, it starts with TCP, and we're going, okay, at the TCP layer, wouldn't it be great if I can just send a local acknowledgement, right? Just to keep the pipe full. And then we said, well, the pipe or the path or the network is full.
You're talking about a TCP ACK there.
Yeah, yeah. And then what we're saying?
It's solving the long, fat network problem. It's the latency issue that you're overcoming with that local acknowledgement.
Yeah, exactly. And then that pipe is full. And then customer said, well, I want to put more on the pipe. It's great that you're helping me put more data out, but I need to even put more out, right? Because there's that business case around going, hey, do I want to pay for more bandwidth? Or can I use that bandwidth a little more efficiently? And then we said, all right, well, let's do this data streamlining thing. And then we came to find out, well, like, as you mentioned, SIFs. Some of these protocols are just chatty, right? They have a lot of turn to them. And so if you have to wait 50 milliseconds, 100 milliseconds, make a little request and come back, so on and so forth, wouldn't it be great for an application proxy to understand the dialect and be able to talk back to it? And then we were like, at a point after that, said, what else can you do beyond WAN optimization? It's a natural step to go, can I control the traffic? QoS, right? And then we said, well, in some cases, it's more efficient to control it coming into the site, inbound QoS. And we said, well, you have multiple ways out. Wouldn't it make sense to detect that application and say, go left or go right? While all the while, you can still apply the TCP optimization, the data streamlining or data reduction, or in the latency optimization in terms of the chattiness of the protocol. And then we're going...
So what you're saying to me is, A, you're already getting inside the protocol, you're unpacking it, you're decoding it, you're saying, oh, this is HTTP, this is SMB SIFs, this is Oracle, this is SQL, this is whatever it is, right? Citrix. Now, because I'm already doing all that counting, I've already got an inspection engine that's doing the deepest bitwise operations on the thing. So not only can I traffic shape it down to bits per second, you know, and decide how much I want to throttle it by many different means. You've got a lot of handles there to be able to change the way the traffic flows. But it makes obvious sense that you can now select the paths. So where I was up until now, we've actually had routers to say, you know, private WAN circuit 1, private WAN circuit 2, internet gateway over here. We're now down to the point where you can say, hey, why don't I just say this traffic is this style, send that over the internet. This is this type of traffic, send that over my private WAN. That's the sort of actionable item I get out of this.
That's actually right, Greg. And the one thing I will add on to that, to what Scott just built on, was a couple things, right? Number one, if you can't do SSL securely, get the hell out of here, right? SSL is the new TCP. If you expect your customers to put your private certificate out at every branch location, again, it's get the hell out of here time, right? No one's going to do that. We have a patented way of securely doing that. Again, it was initially for WAN optimization. Turns out it's a perfect component that fits into our path selection, visibility, optimization, and controlling of the traffic. Okay.
So let me just drill into something here. You're talking about to be able to unpack an SSL session, you have to have the private key to decrypt it.
That's right.
And the way that most other WAN optimization vendors do that is say, go and get your private key from your Active Directory server and go and put it in all the WAN optimizers in all the branches, right?
That's exactly right. And in fact, one of my customers asked me, hey, we're testing this out with somebody else, and the company's SC asked me, do you think you could get the key from Microsoft? And I say, well, good luck with that.
Yeah, we can't, but maybe you could have a go.
Exactly. Right. Customer's always right.
Why don't you just set your call?
Yeah. And Mr. Nadella, would you mind giving me your private key from Microsoft so I can get my product to work? No, again, get the hell out of here, right? Yeah. So we don't have time for that. We do it very differently. It's very secure. At no point is that encrypted data, whether it's at rest or in flight, insecure. Okay, so we've got that. We've been doing that for the last 8 years. But, you know, there's another component that we've been kind of talking about, and it goes to Sun Computer. Sun Computing had it right 20 years ago. The network is the computer. They were absolutely right, right? We're all networking guys here. The network is the glue. It's the one place you can troubleshoot. It's the single source of truth because it doesn't matter. Packets don't lie, right? Mm-hmm. And now, though, the problem is the packets don't lie is absolutely true, but what if the packet doesn't belong to me? What if it goes direct to internet? So guess who accelerates to the cloud with WAN optimization, gives you visibility from the cloud, right, and troubleshoots into the cloud? We do that. We've been doing that, right?
So we can. Okay, that's very interesting, because if I'm playing the role of the enterprise customer, that's really important to me because I need to be able to get visibility of my apps in the cloud. So let's talk exactly how you do that. If I'm sending data to Salesforce, okay, tell me how you do it with Salesforce.
Sure. Today, most customers of Salesforce would say, you know what? Salesforce was slow, right? We don't know if it was a network. We don't know if it was a client. We don't know if it was a browser. We don't know if it was Salesforce. Sometimes you get a message from Salesforce, sometimes not. So now your job as a networking guy is when you get the call saying, hey, Salesforce, it's quarter end, dude. I got to get this in or we don't make our numbers. Okay? It's for some company is make or break day or week towards the end of each quarter. Salesforce is absolutely critical. Okay? For that week, Salesforce, there's nothing more important than fulfillment, Salesforce, et cetera, right? Mm-hmm. To get that sales closed. So today, what we can do is we accelerate to a steelhead right next to Salesforce, wherever they are, because they're cloudy, right? Mm-hmm. So yep. We spin up a steelhead closest to them for that user or that company, and we accelerate, we punch through the congestion that you can see on the internet. We've done that. Check.
So what I'm hearing there is you've got like a cloud system on the internet, and I can take the riverbed that's on my site, and it will pair with the one that's in the cloud. You'll set up a VM what, dynamically?
Dynamically, and with key exchanges already happening in the background so that you mm-hmm. don't have to mess with it. It's secure all the way. And guess what? That steelhead in the cloud sends telemetry back to the user so you know exactly how long it took for that packet to get there. You know mm-hmm. exactly what the user experience was like. And get this, we'll tell you which URL or which click of the mouse was the slowest of them all.
So this was one of the things I wanted to talk about later on, was about end user experience monitoring and how do we report back to the business on performance. And we might segue into that in a second. But what you're saying to me is, let me just recap over that because I think that's really important. Salesforce.com somewhere on the internet. I don't know. I have an internet pipe. It's a gigabit or, 10 gigabit pipe. But once the traffic leaves my site, zero control. I can put a riverbed internet facing, buy a service from Riverbed called Cloud something or another. What's it called? Cloud Steelhead?
It's Riverbed SaaS Acceleration.
Right. And you've designed it in such a way that you have the facilities to instantiate another Riverbed, because there always has to be two appliances to do the acceleration. And it's as close to Salesforce as you can manage it, and it will accelerate the entire Salesforce experience on that basis.
The one thing I like to add to this is that we have 2,000 points of presence around the world. So it's not like when we spin these instances up, we are always within 5 to 10 milliseconds from the SaaS server that we're trying to consume. So that's a real powerful thing. When you look at our SaaS overlay network that we have for optimizing this, it's humongous. So, and we've got, 8 to 10,000 steelheads running in that at any given time.
I'm still trying to absorb. You're saying 2,000 points of presence with, a number of steelheads in those locations. So this means not just Salesforce, but Office 365? You're in the Microsoft Azure data centers?
Absolutely. So we optimize two specific rings. So Hansung talked about what we do with SaaS. And from SaaS today, we do Office 365, we do Salesforce, we do Box, we do ServiceNow, and so on and so forth. What we've done with our latest release is we've decoupled our SaaS engine and our normal Rios hardware appliance code. We've separated them so that we can uptick more SaaS apps quickly. And we're doing it two ways. SaaS providers are coming to us and saying, hey, our stuff needs a little bit of help. Can you help us out? And we'll add them in. And then our customers are coming to us and saying, I have an app. It's not working well. Can you help me develop through the cycle? So we've got both these demand points for building the SaaS, continuing to build the SaaS infrastructure out.
That infrastructure that you've got, typically you have to have the riverbeds in line of the traffic. Now, I'm quite sure that these remote data centers are not allowing you to pump a bunch of traffic through them. So how does the local steelhead, local to me in my data center, know to deliver traffic to some riverbed that's out there on the internet for SaaS acceleration?
That's all secret, man. We can't tell you anything about that.
Stop the recording well,
it's
now.
It's just us. No, don't worry. Don't worry about it. It's only us. It's only us.
Greg and I won't tell a soul, we promise.
So we do a couple things there, right? So we're taking what was our traditional like auto discovery, which is TCP options kind of based, and we wrapper it into a UDP header, and we send it into the cloud, and then from that, or basically into the internet, and put this magic wrapper on it, and then that gets to where the exit point is, and then we know we can hit that steelhead. So inside that wrapper are a lot of things, basically bits and bytes, but it essentially identifies who you are as a customer, so we know you're going to peer with the steelhead in the cloud that pertains to you, that is has the encryption keys and the certificates on it that are relevant for you.
So my local steelhead knows he's going to send traffic to some remote steelhead. And how does he make that choice of which one to deliver
traffic
to?
He doesn't have to pick that, right?
Okay.
We don't want that steelhead to have to say, okay, here's the one or here's the two that are in front of Salesforce that I go to, right? We just want him to simply get it into that fabric. And from there, that fabric will get it to a steelhead that's closest to that entry point.
Okay, so you guys do you tear apart the information that's in that special header and then figure out where to forward this on to and stand up a tunnel from there, and then a session is established, something like that?
And that's where our partnership with Akamai really plays in, right? So that's the fabric. That's the secret sauce, right, is working with them and taking a bit of their code for what's SureRoute IP, putting it into the steelhead, right? And then having them put in a bit of our code, which happens to be like mainly a steelhead, right, and put it into there. And so then this secure key exchange and all of that can kind of rely upon what they've already built up over the years as well. So there's a – and as you know, Akamai's pretty big. Big, right? They're in this business of being able to run a lot of points of presence, right? And so now we're going, oh, okay, listen, you want to turn on ServiceNow? You want to turn on this SaaS app, that SaaS app? Great, let's do it. Let's do it. Let's keep going because – there's no point in stopping once we just got to Office 365 and Salesforce. There's a lot of other mission critical SaaS applications out there.
Yeah, I was just asking those two because the two apps that I'm most commonly seeing in the enterprise is Office 365 and Salesforce seems to have some traction. Everything else runs on site, so those are the two that are off prem.
In ServiceNow, Greg. So we support ServiceNow and Workday. Workday is an HR app that a lot of companies, mid-sized companies, use. And so it's no surprise that at Riverbed we use all these SaaS, and we were, helping our customers, but we wanted to help ourselves first. So we're users of all these services. So they went to the top of the list. So
I'm speculating in my head. Did you invent the GeoDNS service for customers, or did you invent it for this service? And then you brought it. I wonder odd things like that. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, the GeoDNS one was a really fun to kind of to think through because that was really a blending of what we could do with WAN optimization and really steering in the internet sense, right? I mean, you think about steering on your network, you can do PBR, you can do all kinds of stuff, right? But now you're going, hey, I want to get to a place on the internet that's going to get me my data in the most efficient way. And that was kind of a cool thing.
I guess the other thing I'm just thinking about this, in a situation where my branch offices already have a bunch of Riverbeds installed and they're currently WAN accelerating to my, say, my head office, which would be the default installation, correct?
Yep. Yeah.
And now you're saying to me, well, if you're using Salesforce, I can turn my, no doubt there's a code upgrade or a licensing issue here, but I could go and get the Riverbed cloud service and suddenly start to accelerate my Salesforce apps over the internet. So instead of sending the Salesforce down my private WAN and paying a Mozza for that bandwidth, I can start saying, why don't I just send my Salesforce traffic out over the internet connection and then use your WAN acceleration to make sure it runs best. So, my branch office in Perth in Australia is, so far away from Salesforce data centers, I can just turn on the WAN acceleration into the cloud and things are going to improve. Is that fundamentally the logic?
That's fundamentally it, yeah.
Absolutely. And the one other thing that goes along with it, when you take our visibility tools that go along with it, is so now you're seeing it from, like Hansung said earlier, seeing it on a per-transaction basis. So the guy in Perth that's going today, God, Salesforce sucks, Salesforce sucks, Salesforce sucks, you can go in and look through the instrumentation tools and says, oh, yeah, Salesforce sucks because... And you can pick up the phone and then you can call and work with them and saying, hey, we're seeing long delay times in this particular workflow. Can we work through it and get it done? So no longer is it just terrible. We can say it's terrible. Why?
Uh-huh. That makes perfect sense. That's the biggest problem with networking is we don't get that insight. I can't go back. The biggest problem that I have in networking is still mean time to innocence. It's not the network. Right? The goal here is to say, you know, when the boss comes down, and you just have to sit there and go, it's the internet. There's no guarantees. There's no instrumentation. I can't count every single packet.
But yeah, and Greg, one thing, you know, is we kind of touched on it, right? But in this day and age where one viral, you know, social media post can change the face of a company, right? Think about that. And I always call this, you know, it's a class action lawsuit of one person. We've seen this again and again and again and again, right? So imagine, right, a company sitting there going, someone just said we suck and made a funny video about it. Now it's a PR disaster, right? For all we know, it wasn't Salesforce at all. Maybe it was a local CLEC that had a problem. Maybe it was sitting in a Starbucks location and someone was BitTorrenting in there, and that was a reason, right? So companies do need this mean time to innocence because they have to, A, prove themselves innocent, but B, make sure their users are happy, both externally facing and internally facing, right? And so when you tie end user experience, this is why we exist. We don't make networks just to have beautiful Visio diagrams of a network architecture. Right, people need to get work done on them, and that's what we do. We pave roads, and now what we're saying is we're going to build this virtual HOV, high occupancy, you know, carpool lane that can expedite it for VIPs, right? And we're going to do that, and we're going to be able to roll down that window of a tinted limousine and say, "I'm sorry, who's in the car? Oh, you're the VIP. You go on the VIP lane, right?" And so it doesn't matter about identifying the car itself. That's the packet. Doesn't matter about the license plate, that's the IP address. We care about who's riding in that car, right?
Well, and the IP address is becoming increasingly irrelevant, right? Because
absolutely,
there's so much NAT going on and there's multiple NAT. You actually, the IP or the source address is less of an indicator than it ever has been. Until we get to IPv6, maybe you can get more out of that because of the uniqueness. But for now, that's the reality of it.
I did a session yesterday. We had the sales training, and we actually had a funeral for the IP address. It was just, it's dead. It's going away. It's irrelevant.
Funeral for the IP as an identifier. You're saying not the IP address.
Yeah, it's IP. It's bye. You're dead. So, and the thing that we look at it from Riverbed, and part of it is as we continue to address these SaaS services, is recognizing things by name. And so, all of our level of DPI is that, you know, we can look at it and we can say, oh, not that it's just Facebook traffic, but our DPI level is it Facebook games? Is it Facebook chat? Is it Facebook Messenger? And be able to lie quality of service all the way down to that level within applications.
Let me ask you guys a question about – we were talking about apps and identifying apps. We talked a lot about SaaS apps. What about some of the in-house apps I might have, like unified communications apps? And so here's the context. We're saying at this point that Riverbed has an SD-WAN solution, that the Steelhead platform can deliver SD-WAN. You've got private, you've got public links. We can deal with all that. We can go left or go right, that kind of thing. Historically, and I'm going back on my experience as an engineer, I would tell my voice traffic to skip the Steelhead. It would hit the Steelhead, and I'd have in the policy just pass through, don't touch it. Because that was, you know, kind of the normal thing to do. Is that still the way it is, or do you guys handle unified communications traffic and give it a left or right choice?
So, Ethan, on a pure RTP VoIP, we don't have to touch it. Except, think about, you know, in a fully meshed environment where VoIP calls, once the SIP messaging happens, right, the UDP traffic from phone to phone is directly connected.
Exactly. Yeah.
And because it's going through a Steelhead, guess what they provide? Telemetry. So you can get MOS, you can get R-Factor, you can get the call quality, jitter, packet loss, et cetera, on that RTP itself, right? So when you have this, you know, full mesh environment where every phone can talk to one another in the most or the shortest networking path, that's okay because our Steelheads still give you telemetry. So that's one. Number two is UC today can mean desktop sharing, click to dial, or chatting or something else. Because of our deep visibility, we can tell the difference between video and voice. And if you can tell the difference between video and voice, even if they're going to the same call manager or to the same end node, because they are, right? My PC is going to Brad's PC, and we're having a video conversation, and we're having an audio conversation. We can separate the two out, and we can treat them differently as needed, quality of service or otherwise, so that you can have the best. Because let's face it, video, you can afford to drop a few packets, but not so much on voice.
But not so much on voice, right. So you're saying with telemetry, as in, you know, paths between different steelheads, you know the quality of that line, what it's offering for a particular kind of voice traffic. And no, you're not going to optimize it, but you can route it or direct it across a specific path based on what kind of traffic that is and what the policy is based around that traffic.
Absolutely correct.
Okay.
And there's money there, right? If you can stop sending traffic down the WAN circuit and send it over the internet, you're actually saving a lot of money because it's cheap to get DSL connections or, you know, 10 meg Ethernet pipes to the branch than it is to get 10 meg private WAN MPLS circuits.
Yep.
By, and Greg, you know, big money.
Yeah, and you know, this is a shout out to all the networking guys out there, right? They're scratching their head like, what the hell? I can do that. And let me give you an example. We, as CCIAs, all have used GRE tunnels to tie an OSPF area together, right? Or to traverse another area, to get to another area. We built these GRE tunnels for our use, okay, for our convenience. And it worked remarkably well. Well, there's the MTU mismatch issues and whatnot. We've learned from that. We moved on from that. And so we build these GRE tunnels to do what? To build a shortcut through a network to get my stuff done better, quicker, etc.
Yep.
And what we're saying is,
and then we got
is,
tired of GRE tunnels and turned them into MPLS tunnels.
Who's got time to do tunnel source, tunnel destination?
Yeah,
am
right.
I troubleshooting? You know, so who's got time for that? And what we're saying is, let's give that goodness to everybody else, right? So that they can experience the same dynamic shortcut experience, but with scalability, with visibility, and most of all, without me jumping on a router and typing out a bunch of CLI commands at 3 a.m. Right?
That's important too. We've got to get away from the CLI because the user interface it made perfect sense 25 years ago, but in 2015, the CLI isn't very useful. It's not very practical as the amount of, and not because the CLI is fundamentally bad. It's for the same reason that on Linux we have tools like Puppet and Chef, is so that you don't have to type every single command. They should be easier to use in some way. And most of what we want to do in networking is actually GUI driven, not conft show run int. You know, there's no data there, right? Anyway, rant over.
There's lots of data there, of course, but it's just so hard to digest. You know, a well-done GUI makes a ton of data easily digestible, which I think is the crucial element.
That's right. That's right.
Okay, so now what I want to do is I want to dive a little bit into my perennial bugbear, which is troubleshooting. One of the greater problems I have with networking equipment of today is that my troubleshooting tools are more like a baseball bat on the head of my baby brother when I was a teenager. Not really effective, but practical to a point. So how does the Riverbed provide the capabilities for me to improve my troubleshooting? Because I'm thinking that because that box is in the flow, you're going to get a lot of visibility into there and you're going to start to feed back into my troubleshooting cycle.
Yeah, so I mean, I've had customers who just love the fact that that box at the branch can just do TCP dump. Right, so that's one way, and then of course you can add on to that and go, all right, let's get the flow out, let's get some flow reporting going on, and then you can also add in other things once you start optimizing connections that we've been talking about, where you can get that transaction level analysis and push that into tools.
Mm-hmm.
So just by having that steelhead there, you can be your traditional packet guy, right? Run TCP dump, get the Wireshark. You can go in and say, hey, get that big TCP dump, but only give me a snippet because that branch is, you know, maybe on a small connection. Give me what I need out of that. Go into that and say, of that big trace, and say, I really just want this conversation.
My riverbed can actually be, well, my steelhead, not my riverbed, but my steelhead is actually like a distributed packet capture engine. I can actually have, if I was one at a branch, I can say, capture me packets for this, bang. And more importantly,
we have a winner. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And that's powerful when you think about it at the branch, right? Where does the problem happen? Hey, I can't print to my printer in the branch. Well, you happen to not be at that branch. So you're not going to run over there with a Wireshark and a span port, connect in and go, hey, all right, here we go. So you have to have some tools to be able to get into that and be able to solve that problem.
And Greg, the one other thing that I like to talk about, you know, Scott just talked about getting flow information out. It turns out on our visibility side of the house, we have the ability, and this is, again, this is something as a network engineer we all want, right? We have BGP AS to AS level traffic movement. I can tell you with a report how your BGP route reflector design is working because I can tell you In what direction is my traffic moving from one AS to another? Is it coming back around the other way? Do I have inadvertently created an asymmetry where I didn't want to, right? From that, with two clicks, I can get to host pair information. So I go from AS1 to AS2. All right, this is interesting. Let me deep dive a little bit here.
Yep, sure.
One or two clicks, I have the conversation pair. Here's this destination, this for this port, using these quality of service across these 10 routers. What did I just do? I just gave you the perfect segue into troubleshooting a voice problem where someone forgot to type, you know, MLS trust DHCP command, and there goes my QoS, okay?
Yep.
So we can say, oh, you know what? This router number 5 along the hop, he's the guy that's tripping out the QoS. Let's go fix him, right? And then if that's not enough, you can right-click on that flow and say, give me the packets for this flow, please. And using our packet capture technology, we'll go and get those packets and bring them up. Again, packets don't lie. That's true. But let's think back. In a branch, it makes perfect sense. It's the perfect use case. Because like Scott said, we don't all have sniffers out there. Well, now you do if you have steelheads. But in a data center with 10 gig, 40 gig, 100 gig right around the corner, you can't start with a packet. You know, you can't do 63 million packets in a few seconds and expect it. So we need to raise that troubleshooting lens up a little bit. And let's
not use
it. You
need to have filtering. You need to be really intelligent about filtering down and saying, I need to see this in some way. You can't just capture all the packets and say, needle, haystack, start fishing. You know, and I guess the other side of this is I'm reminded of a show we did back, show 108, where we did a show with Gerald Coombs, who's the developer of Wireshark, that app that everybody uses to troubleshoot the packets. Now, Riverbed is the corporate sponsor of that project.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you're not familiar, folks, there's an event called Shark Fest every year, and one may be coming to EMEA soon. But, you know, this is a passion of mine. I've been involved with Shark Fest, where we developers, the core developers and expert troubleshooters come to share their expertise. And, again, a passion of mine. Gerald's a good friend of mine. We go traipsing around the world together, doing road shows together. And, you know, and a shout out to Gerald, right? I mean, if you think about it, he transformed that entire field.
That whole field. It used to be Network General Sniffer.
They used to charge
$30,000 a year for a license, $30,000 a year for a license to a packet capture.
Exactly. So
seriously.
And so, you know, it's kudos to him. He changed the way things get done from a packet analysis standpoint. And I equate it to this way, right? That's a surgical tool. Okay, it's a scalpel where I have an idea of what I need to do, and I use a scalpel to do the most minimally invasive procedure to get the job done. But if I don't have that and I need to search through a forest, I'm not going to use a scalpel to cut down trees. You can do it. You could do it. But why would you? Use a chainsaw.
A lot of people do this with NetFlow, but you've got to capture all those NetFlow records and move them around the network. And NetFlow record collection can actually be more bandwidth than your actual applications.
Yeah, and in fact, you know, that reminds me because there was one instance where, because I own all the monitoring at a very, very large company, and we ran a top 10 report for a small branch, the head of the business said, hey, what app is that? And I said, which one? He goes, the number 3. And I was like, oh, man. Number 3 on the list was SNMP. He's like, I don't have an app called SNMP. What is that? And I said, pay no attention to the man behind the curtains.
Pay no attention.
It was just a small branch. Yeah. And so, you know, the high number of top talkers usually would have been business app. This is a small branch. And so, again, to your point.
Happened to me plenty of times. The only way SNMP is useful is when you're monitoring at 60 seconds or less. And when you do that, you're actually...
Right. Yeah. You know, and SNMP, right? Security not my problem. That's what that stands for. So, again, the idea is the tools get out of the way, right? They should disappear, but be on beck and call because I may need that high-level visibility. I may need that high-definition and 4K visibility, but sometimes I need that microscopic visibility, and Wireshark is better, none better.
Right. And one last thing, you know, you hit on a topic here. Let's just cover the security ground again because security is all top of mind because people have been doing nasty things to people. And, of course, network security is in the focus again. So for all this application inspection that Riverbed is doing in the steelhead, you're looking deeply, you're fingerprinting your application. At no point are you actually unencrypting the data. You're not able to steal my data at any point, right?
That's right. It's secure. So we look inside in memory. The hard disk is encrypted with AES 256, I think. And so, again, every step of the way, everything is secured.
All right. So you would pass the appropriate audits and reviews. If I put your devices in, you're not unencrypting my secret data. You're just optimizing it without unencrypting it? Or
yeah.
Is that...
Yeah, and the other part that I want to bring, because you know this is audit is a big thing. It's fully TACX compliant, and not just authentication, all three A's of AAA. So when you type a steelhead command, you can ask your TACX server saying, "Hey, am I allowed to type this command?" And so there are commands that you can restrict from being typed using your AAA solution, right? So this is industry grade, enterprise grade appliance.
And if somebody steals a device, they're not going to get the private keys like some other WAN optimization solution.
Imagine having that conversation with your CISO and CIO.
Yeah. but we put it in a special chip.
Right, exactly.
All right. I think we're probably going to wrap it up here. I'd like to thank our guests from Riverbed for joining us on the show today. Thanks to Han Sang Bae, Scott Wilson, and Brad Wood for joining us. Ethan, any closing thoughts?
The big thing for me that I took away from this is how far Riverbed has come in the SD-WAN space. We didn't talk about SD-WAN specifically. You know, we get into all those details. But, yeah, there's a solution there. So just when I was kind of – Riverbed had kind of left my brain, I'd kind of forgotten. It's like, wait a minute. They're right there. And not only that, they've got years and years and years of technology to build on for the solution. So that was really cool stuff.
And Ethan – and Greg, let me leave you with this, right? To do SD-WAN, you do have to understand routing somewhat, right? Let's face it, that's the big elephant in the room. So tune in next time to find out how we at Riverbed solve that problem.
Mm-hmm. So a bit of a sneak peek under the kimono there, I think.
But, absolutely.
So for me, one of the things is that use case around the cloud WAN, that idea of accelerating across the internet using a cloud as a central point to get closer to the application source like Salesforce or Azure, Office 365 or whatever, that's something we haven't discussed before, Ethan, with any of the other SD-WANs, and that's a use case I hadn't visualized in my head. And that, to me, is like WAN bypass. Now, all of a sudden, I can wind back the bandwidth on my WAN and send my traffic out over the internet using my existing steelheads, which is a pretty interesting use case. And all the other stuff is there as well. The visibility, mean time to innocence, the troubleshooting, the packet capture turns into something that I need to start tracking Riverbed a little bit more closely. But okay, so that's it for the show this week, and thanks for listening to Packet Pushers. As always, you can leave your comments on the show notes on the blog post that accompanies this show. Any links or relevant information will be contained there. And if you leave a comment and you've got some questions for the Riverbed crew, do that and we'll be able to forward them over and we'll get them to troll through and make sure that any questions you've got have been answered. There'll also be contact information there for people, so if you want to go and find out more information about any specific topics, hit that up. You can also email us, packetpushers@gmail.com. Follow us on the Twitter as @packetpushers. But most importantly, and as always, remember that too much networking would never be enough.
Still here? Good. Just one more thing to add. Riverbed has created a landing page for the Packet Pushers audience. So if you want to find out more about what you heard on this show and what else is going on at Riverbed, head on over to riverbed.com/packetpushers. One more time, that is riverbed.com/packetpushers. Okay. We're done this time. Seriously, we're done.